Sibling rivalry is normal. Sometimes big brothers tussle with their little brothers, and sometimes little sisters tattle on their big sisters. But there's a point at which natural conflict turns ugly and escalates into dangerous behavior. It's called abuse. Today on Insight for Living, Chuck Swindoll points to a picture in the first book of the Bible that clearly portrays a pattern of violent behavior. While the story of Joseph is somewhat familiar, you likely have never heard it portrayed this way. Chuck titled today's message, An Abused Man and His Brothers. And we'll begin by reading the passage together.
It is easy to forget that in all of these epical events, nobody expected the main character in each is the living God. There are human elements in all the stories, but the main character is God. He is at work. He's fulfilling his purpose. He's using different individuals. His plan is unfolding. None of that changes in the passing of time. So as we look together at Genesis 45, and then a few verses in the middle of chapter 50 of Genesis, you'll again realize, though the name of God, or I should say the actual presence of God may be absent, he's there. He's there all the way through the story of Joseph. Over and over and over, God is there. No one knew it better than Joseph. Genesis 45, I'll read for you the first several verses, and then we will look at chapter 50 together. Genesis 45. Joseph could stand it no longer. There were many people in the room, and he said to his attendants, "Out, all of you." So he was alone with his brothers when he told them who he was. Then he broke down and wept. He wept so loudly, the Egyptians could hear him. And word of it quickly carried to Pharaoh's palace. "I am Joseph," he said to his brothers. "Is my father still alive?" But his brothers were speechless. They were stunned to realize that Joseph was standing there in front of them. "Please, come closer," he said to them. So they came closer, and he said again, "I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into slavery in Egypt. But don't be upset. Don't be angry with yourselves for selling me to this place. It was God who sent me here ahead of you to preserve your lives." Verse 7, "God has sent me ahead of you to keep you and your family's alive." Verse 8, "So it was God who sent me here, not you. He is the one who made me an advisor to Pharaoh, the manager of his entire palace, and the governor of all Egypt. Now hurry back to my father and tell him, this is what your son Joseph says, God has made me master over all the land of Egypt. We move ahead to chapter 50 and we pass through a little over 17 years of time. And the brothers are still trying to believe that they are forgiven. Look at verse 18. 50:18. Then his brothers came and threw themselves down before Joseph. "Look, we are your slaves," they said. But Joseph replied, "Don't be afraid of me. Am I God that I can punish you? You intended to harm me, but God intended it all for good. He brought me to this position so I could save the lives of many people. No, don't be afraid. I will continue to take care of you and your children." So he reassured them by speaking kindly to them. Listen to me. This is an adult abused man. And there isn't evidence of any emotional baggage from the abuse, because his focus was on the living God who erased the pain of yesterday to bring about the beauty from those ashes. So today I dedicate these words that will be preached to all of you who have been abused. And I do so with deepest feelings of respect for you and understanding and compassion.
You're listening to Insight for Living. To search the scriptures with Chuck Swindoll, be sure to download his Searching the Scriptures studies by going to insightworld.org/studies. And now the message from Chuck called An Abused Man and His Brothers.
Epical events nobody expected. That's what we're spending our time on these days. Each of these four events is ancient because they're all found in the scriptures. And all of these scriptures we turn to are ancient. But the more you spend time in each event, the more it feels timeless. You don't feel like it's an old story, out of date, out of touch. It's like today, ancient, but in touch with now. Each of these events is truly momentous. You couldn't have imagined their happening had Joseph been your neighbor or your best friend. Nor could you have ever guessed that what would happen ultimately to him. Which brings up the fact that all four are studies in contrast. They begin with an impossibility, a situation that is so bleak and broken, you can't imagine good coming from it. And each ends where God intervenes and brings about beauty out of the ashes, purpose out of the pain. And each of the four is amazingly relevant. You will see yourself again and again in each of the four epical events, because the fact is, they still happen. They still occur. And because it's you or because it's me, we don't see them as epical. But we look back and realize, look at that. Remember when? And now look at this. Look at this that's happened in spite of that. Last time we spent our time with an aging father, probably between 115, 120 years of age, who had been given a son when he was 100. And Abraham and Sarah loved that boy. And then God broke through in that epical, unexpected, unpredictable moment and said, kill him. Without hesitation, without argument, without reluctance, Abraham followed God's directions all the way through to the point of taking the knife to plunge it into his son. And the angel intervened, another contrast in the story. What looked like death became not only life for Isaac, but for the seed of Isaac and the Jews for centuries to come. Now I know, said the Lord, that you fear me more than you love him. Now I know. Today is the story of an abused 17-year-old boy. According to Genesis chapter 37, we know precisely that is his age. So as I've asked you all along, put yourself in the sandals of each person we meet and imagine you're 17-year-old or when you were 17, still in your formative years. Out of the blue, because of jealousy, since he was the father's favorite, being the youngest in the family, the brothers hated him and decided to murder him. None of it known to Joseph, of course. As Joseph makes his way to where they all were, they ambush him, discuss how to kill him, throw him in a cistern with plans to take his life until one says, no, we can make some money out of this. And they see a caravan coming from Canaan going to Egypt, and they think, let's sell him. When you stop, study the story, you realize it is an ancient case of human trafficking. Abuse, sold to others who are strangers, and who knows what must have happened to Joseph from Canaan to Egypt in that caravan. We don't know. Most acts of abuse are done in secrecy. We don't know what scars Joseph lived with or how the Ishmaelites in that caravan treated their slave. So they bring him to Egypt. Egypt. How different from where he had been in the quiet, quaint little village where he lived with his father Jacob and his brothers. He is now thrust into a country who speaks a language he doesn't know, who observe customs he's never observed, and worshiping gods of other names with strange animal faces in this weird setting, fast-paced Egypt. He's a slave, bought by Pharaoh's captain of the guard named Potiphar, put into the house as a house slave. What a shock, from favored son to forgotten boy, from pampered child to enslaved young man, unknown, living now with his memories. I let my mind run free. As I said in my study, and I thought of Joseph on a hard mat on the floor of that house, or maybe outside the house where he slept, and looking up into the night sky with no moon, how easy it would have been for him to nurse a grudge and to lick his wounds as he rehearsed the abuse, none of which was deserved. And as he lay there before he could go to sleep, thinking, "You just wait. You just wait. My day is coming." I looked up abuse in Webster's New Collegiate Dictionary. Everything I read turned my stomach. It's ugly, it's unfair, and I'll give you just the high points. It goes on and on. To abuse is to use wrongly or improperly, to injure by maltreatment, to force sexual activity on another, rape, molestation, to assault with abusive words, physical maltreatment, a corrupt practice or custom forced upon you, coarse and insulting language. I'll stop there. I'll risk a hard question. As I probe into the vault of your labyrinthine secret world of private anguish, your emotional scars, as they still ooze the pus of your past. It was horrible. Have you known such cynical cruelty? Have you been a victim of life-altering abuse? Does the pain linger in unguarded moments? Does it emerge and take charge of your mind? Control your thoughts. If so, then you can understand how Joseph could have handled the abuse, but he did not. Not once. I've looked and looked and looked and looked. Not one reference to a lingering hatefulness or statement of revenge or moment to get even. I hit the pause button here at this epical event and remind you of his remarkable ability to deal with his inner pain. He's 17, 18, 19, 20. No daddy, no family, no Canaan. He's a tool in the hand of a seductive woman who attempts to seduce him and make him her sex slave. Doesn't even fall for that. She accuses him of rape. Her husband believes her. Maybe. I've always wondered if Potiphar, knowing his wife as he must have known her, if he really did believe that there had been a rape, I believe if he had believed that, he would have killed Joseph on the spot. He's the captain of the guard. This is one hardened veteran of battle. But he puts him in the king's prison and leaves him. That's still unfair. But back to Joseph. You know what? I looked at his life, and I erased all the things I knew that would come, and I just thought, what kind of guy is this? I found myself thinking we could put a halo over him, make him half human, half angelic. And then he could withstand it. But he wasn't that. We could put a cape on his back and a triangle on his chest and call him Super Saint. But he wasn't that. He was just a red-blooded Jewish young man who came from Canaan, just a country boy, thrust into this setting, knowing nothing of what he was facing. Well, then maybe he was in denial. You'll hear that. Maybe he just blocked it out of his mind, like you've been told to do. It's not denial. When you get toward the end of the story in chapter 50, he says to his brothers, "You intended to harm me. I know that. I knew what you were doing when it happened." In fact, in one of the dialogues, as the brothers are reliving and trying to patch up their lives and deal with their guilt, one of them says, "I still remember how he cried out and said, 'Don't do this.'" It was painful. The abandonment and the selling him off to the caravan. He's not in denial. "You meant it to be for evil, but my God, greater than all of us and the whole world put together, intended it for good." You won't get that from the social media. You won't hear that from the great majority of psychiatrists or psychologists. You'll get it from the scriptures. You'll see it in a man who was no more superhuman than your 17-year-old or mine. And you'll see the amazement of what God did. Well, we left him in prison a moment ago, so we'll go back, and he's forgotten. He is. He's there with, he's a model prisoner, not surprising. He wins the heart of the warden. He wins over the friendship of fellow inmates. And when you read through the story, it's like, good night. The guy is this. Not a word of bitterness. Not one. This man is living large the life of a believer.
Let me urge you to be listening again next week when we continue our study of this serious subject. It's unlikely you've ever heard Joseph's story told in this context, and yet the egregious act of abuse has become all too common in our day. You're listening to Insight for Living. Today's message from Chuck Swindoll is titled, An Abused Man and His Brothers. It's message number 2 in a brand new 4-part study called Epical Events Nobody Expected. To learn more about this ministry, visit us online at insightworld.org. No one likes to be on the receiving end of mistreatment of any kind or at any level, but none of us can escape the inevitable suffering that eventually comes our way. Well, Chuck delivered a message intended to bolster your resolve. The title gives you a clue about the theme. It's called, This is No Time for Wimps. We'd be happy to send you a complimentary copy. Just ask for the CD from Chuck called This is No Time for Wimps when you go to insight.org/offer. This offer is valid in the United States only. If you receive Chuck's August letter sent directly to your home, you know the summer months have been financially lean at Insight for Living. And so we boldly invite you to help us close the gap. Your donation of any amount today will be used to touch lives. And you can give a donation right now by calling us. If you're listening in the United States, dial 1-800-772-8888. 1-800-772-8888. Or give online at insight.org. Every single donation is important. But the best way to multiply the impact of your gift is to become a monthly companion. Monthly companions give a donation every month, and over the course of a year have 12 times the influence as a one-time giver. To become a monthly companion right now, call us. If you're listening in the United States, dial 1-800-772-8888. Or follow the simple instructions at insight.org/monthly companion. Be sure to listen when Chuck Swindoll continues his message about an abused man and his brothers, Monday on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, An Abused Man and His Brothers, and the sound recording were copyrighted in 2019 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide. Duplication of copyrighted material for commercial use is strictly prohibited.